Hundreds of journalists covered the war in Afghanistan. Many were captivated by the Afghans and their story. One journalist returned as a social worker of sorts, trying to fix the problems that she wrote about. You may recall the voice of Sarah Chase, who covered the conflict for this network. Now, her face appears in a documentary film about an odyssey that brought her back to Kandahar, Afghanistan a second time.
I really, throughout, have had this very strong feeling that this is where I need to be, that I'm not ready to leave Afghanistan. There have been moments when some people have, you know, advised me, pack up. I'm not ready to leave this country yet.
The film is called Life After War, and Sarah Chase joins us now. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back.
Last time that I saw you, you were just coming out of Afghanistan as a journalist. You had changed over into Afghan clothes. You were wearing Afghan men's clothing and ending that tremendous experience in your life. I guess you couldn't get enough of it.
Yeah, I guess not. You were coming in, as I recall, so it was a delightful moment, a delightful intersection. Yeah, and as I left, I had some, you know, I went around and said goodbye to my favorite contacts and sources. And one of them was the uncle of President Karzai, Aziz Khan. And he was in Quetta, actually. So when I left you in Kandahar, I went to Quetta and I had dinner with him. And we spent a long time talking about what had happened and what the opportunities and likely obstacles were now in Afghanistan's path. And as I got up to leave his house, he just looked at me and said, "Wouldn't you come back and help us?" And I just couldn't say no.
I want to make sure I understand the corner that you turned here, because journalists do try to keep their distance somewhat from the stories that they're covering. You report on what's happening. You don't get too involved with it if you can possibly avoid it. I wonder what did make it so hard to say no. What did cause you to make that leap?
You know, I think part of it is temperament. I tend to take in a lot and take in very deeply the sort of perspective and point of view of people that I'm interacting with. In other words, there was a kind of buildup inside me of a desire to take part somehow.
Now, Sarah, I want to play a little bit of tape from this documentary film because some cameras were following you around. It's the beginning of the process of just rebuilding 13 little mud huts in a village that was severely damaged, and you're just trying to get a bunch of workers to show up in the morning to start working with you, a bunch of Afghans to work. Let's listen.
So now, wait a minute. So wait. How are we doing this now? How, wait, we need to decide, how are we doing this now? Do you have people or do you not have people?
I'm assuming that this is the moment, Sarah Chase, when this brilliant high concept idea of going out to help Afghans began to seem a little more challenging than that.
Yeah, actually it even the rubber hit the road even significantly before that, which was when one of the other people that you heard in that clip speaking Pashto, our engineer, and I went out to do a preliminary survey of this village. About 13 houses out of about 30 were completely plastered. And we took on this project as a way of saying concretely to Afghans that indeed this conflict was not against them, but was against the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. And we wanted to kind of make that real for people on the ground. And so we were doing this survey. What we wanted to do is rebuild the houses as they had been before. We wanted to replace the houses that had been destroyed. So we're climbing over these mounds of rubble, and the villagers are telling us, I had 8 rooms here, and each room had a bathroom, and the rooms were 10 meters long, and stuff like this. And it became immediately apparent that we were never going to find out what the village had looked like, that no one was going to, you know, tell on his neighbor because he also wanted a mansion with a bathroom with every room and concrete bricks and an air conditioner. And that at first was a big shock for me. It was like, it felt like a breach of faith to some extent. And then I thought about it for a while. And what I came to was that they didn't believe that we actually were going to stick it out with them. And they didn't believe that we actually were going to establish a long-standing relationship with them. So they needed to get as much as they possibly could right now. And once I kind of got that, once I kind of understood it, it actually became much easier to deal with this relationship, which continued this way forever and ever and ever. I was able to kind of deal with it with a bit more good humor than at first.
Well, this is how you put it on the scene at the time with the documentary film camera running.
They see me as dollar signs. And that's perfectly legitimate. I totally understand that. They see me as dollar signs, and it's only over time that they're going to start to see me as a person, as a human being. But I think that will happen over time.
You're in the middle of this bombed-out country that's been bombed for more than 20 years, living in this utterly, in many parts of it anyway, destroyed city of Kandahar. And yet you spend this entire film, weeks and weeks, just trying to get 13 houses rebuilt in this one little tiny village outside town.
True. And I've often thought, oh, my God, I just spent 6 months of my life building exactly 13 houses. And that's pretty daunting. Now, there were other things that happened in this story. One of the reasons it took so long to build these houses is because the governor, whose name is Gulara Shirzai, is one of these warlords that you keep hearing about in a classic sense. And what he had done was award a monopoly on, get this, stone to his brother-in-law and nephew or something like that. And so they decided that all the stone in all the mountains on the south side of Kandahar belonged to them, which meant that we couldn't get foundation stone to rebuild these villages for several weeks. And we had to go through this incredible travail to finally get this stone. And that was a way of bringing home for us the real meaning of living under a warlord. I mean, this guy held up our tractors or his men held up our tractors at gunpoint. And, you know, only because we're rather well-connected and extremely pig-headed were we able to actually force through this roadblock.
Sarah, we heard you saying at the beginning of this, on tape from a few months ago, that you're not ready to leave Afghanistan. How about now?
Still not ready. Still not ready. I just feel like this is an adventure that you can't, in conscience, abandon.
Sarah Chase covered Afghanistan for National Public Radio for several months. She's featured in a new documentary called Life After War. And Sarah, it sounds like you'll be going back to Afghanistan again.
Hopefully within a week or so.
Thanks.
Thank you.